This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 30, where we're going to discuss news about Windows, Azure, and Office, and some tech ed news. Welcome to the Microsoft Cloud Show, the only place to stay up to date on everything going on in the Microsoft Cloud world, including Windows Azure, Office 365, SharePoint, Exchange, Link, and related technologies. Just the information, no marketing, no BS. I'm Chris Johnson.
And I'm Andrew Cole.
And we're just two dudes telling you how we see it.
All right. Well, welcome to the show, AC. How things?
Things are good this morning. Things are very good this morning. And yourself?
Pretty good. I'm in now sunny Houston still, towards the end of the week, still at Tech Ed. And it's going well down here.
I saw you guys got a crazy amount of rain yesterday, flooding all over the place and everything.
Oh yeah, we had speakers trying to fly in, like Paul Andrew from the 365 team in Redmond. His flight got delayed. Oh, sorry, diverted. Ended up landing in Dallas, and then he had to rent a car and drive here through torrential rain. His flight landed at 1 a.m., and he had to hire a car and drive here, so it took him 5 hours. And so he got in at around 7 by the time he actually got to the conference center, 8 o'clock, and then had to present his session.
Oh, so, my goodness. Was he a morning session?
He had a garage live presentation, and then he had another session in the afternoon, I think.
Oh, my goodness.
So he had flown to Dallas, then got in a car, and then driven all the way to Houston, and then presented.
Yikes. That doesn't sound fun.
Yeah, so it was basically a whole bunch of really, torrential rain and thunderstorms that blew through.
Yeah, you had that. We're getting it tomorrow as the system comes across. We're one of the few times you can look at the forecast and it says 100% of thunderstorms on Thursday. So we're recording this, for everybody's listening, we're recording this on Wednesday, May the 14th. It'll go live the following Tuesday. And so it's only been about, I guess we recorded an episode 2 days ago from TechEd. So we got more stuff that we've seen that's been announced on this week that we'll go through. But I know that, I hope you guys can get home okay, because there's a massive travel problem. They had a fire or smoke at a control tower in the Chicago area, and it shut down both of the Chicago airports for like half the day yesterday. So it is a complete disaster. But anyway, yeah, things are going good. I listened to this podcast. It has nothing to do with what our listeners listen to, but it's called Startups for the Rest of Us. I know you're familiar with it.
Oh yeah.
And it's two guys that do a lot of solopreneur and entrepreneur stuff and everything. And one of the things that they do, they take questions from their listeners. And one guy had a question about, what's the best place to host stuff and all that. And they went through and started talking about a lot of the stuff that, where they would host things and what they would recommend people take a look at. And I found it interesting because they were all about all of the hosting options that they were giving were, they talked a little bit about Amazon. They talked a very little bit about Azure. But what was surprising is that they only talked about like virtual machine hosting. They never talked about PaaS. They only talked about IaaS. And I found it interesting both from a startup perspective. Really found it interesting from a startup perspective. So I'm going to spend some time later today and give them a nice long bit of feedback, not to chastise them. It'll just be a, hey, look, VMs are great, but they're expensive. If you're building something from the ground up, do you really want to build something with like the same kind of architecture we used from many years ago? Or do you want to use more of a PaaS, which is, I think PaaS is the way of the future. So
I think a whole lot less management, a whole lot more flexibility. If it's right for your specific scenario or your solution or whatever, that's my kind of starting point before. I start at PaaS and then go back to IaaS if I really have to.
Exactly, yeah. You use IaaS if you have to install something, but oh my God, I would do everything I could to stay away from any kind of server-based stuff and want to just go to PaaS where I can scale better and use more services and that stuff.
Oh, I hate the idea of having to patch stuff.
Exactly. Yeah, that's the whole point of that's one of the big, I shouldn't say the whole point. That's a major part of the cloud. So
Yeah.
Anyway.
Cool. So we got some news to go through today. We're going to introduce a new little segment halfway through the show. just to spice things up a little bit and see what people think and get some folks' feedback. So why don't we kick off with some news?
Sounds good to me.
We're going to tackle this in three sections. We've got some developer news, some window news, and some office news. So how about do you want to kick things off with a little bit of dev news?
Absolutely. Let's kick it off. So a lot of this stuff is, some of these things are specific just to general dev stuff, and then some of it is also going to tie into Visual Studio. So the first one is that Visual Studio 2013 and all this news is stuff that's related to Tech Ed 2014. It's going on this week Houston.
Yep.
So one bit of news that happened earlier this week is that the Visual Studio team announced that the Visual Studio 2013 Update 2 has gone from the release candidate state to a full-blown release state. So it is all baked in, done, finished. And that, I believe, that's the one that includes TypeScript 1.0.
So, gotcha. Oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I've been using the update. I put the update on my machine a little while back, playing around with it, and some nice improvements in there. So it's good.
Yeah, it's good. I downloaded the whole. I haven't done the RTM version yet. I downloaded it yesterday, but I need to go ahead and apply it because I have a few VMs where I found some issues with MVC stuff with the release candidate that they were aware of and they were supposed to be ironing those out. So
nice. I also believe the Office development tools are baked in on that final update as well.
Oh, cool.
Having to install this after the fact.
That's good. Well, we had part of that. I guess they were probably updated because we had part of that in Visual Studio 2013. They were baked in, then you had something else, but I guess they're updated.
Yeah, there was a split, but now it's all back in there.
Yep. So that's one.
Sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say that's one update. Another one that we had was they announced a new thing, Visual Studio Online. So that's kind of, we used to know it as TFS Online, but essentially the hosted TFS in a sense. They announced new REST APIs and service hooks. Now, so what this does, this is interesting. They essentially now have a bunch of APIs that we can use to do things like reading and writing and creating work items on a project. We can do things like using it to connect different services. So like they have this thing called, I hope I pronounce this right, Zapier. What this allows us to do is you can actually connect like Visual Studio to do something else. So think of it kind of like a if this then that or an IFTTT solution. So you could say when a new work item is created in Visual Studio Online, that I want you to go create a task in this other system or go do this, may spin up a new SharePoint team site for doing certain things. You could do those kinds of things. Hmm. So that's a new thing that they added too. That's pretty cool. And it's one of those things that I love seeing that companies are putting more APIs out there for existing services that they offer. And I don't mean like SharePoint putting out APIs. I mean like via Visual Studio Online putting out APIs because you don't know what, you have a bunch of ideas, like the company can have a bunch of ideas about what they're going to use it for. But once you put those APIs out there, that's when you start to see what other people have ideas and really start to push the model and to push the envelope to see what kinds of other cool things you can accomplish with this. So it'd be really cool to see where people go with this. There's some Zendesk integration too. There's stuff from User Voice to where I saw one where there's a, with User Voice, if someone put some feedback in there, you could actually from User Voice say, go create a work item in Visual Studio based off of this item as a new feature.
Yeah, it's going to be really nice tying those services together like that because there's ticketing systems and help desk systems and all sorts of things that could be integated with that I think make really good sense.
Yep, that'd be really cool. That'd be really cool.
One bit of news that I saw that I think we briefly touched on in the last show was on a streamlined.net for server and cloud workloads, and that was kind of bundled with some news around Cordova, which for those of you who don't know what Cordova is, it's the full name is Apache Cordova, right? So it's a open source framework for basically building mobile apps using HTML and JavaScript and CSS and all that sort of stuff. But now from Visual Studio, you've got some nice integrated tooling that lets you build multi-device apps using Cordova in your favorite Visual Studio IDE, which I thought was very cool. Now I haven't tried this out myself and haven't done much digging, but that seems pretty cool.
It is cool. They even have project templates that you can use for both JavaScript, for building JavaScript based applications, and they are even shipping the TypeScript definitions for those as well as part of this.
Interesting.
This is a bigger thing. This is just one bit of evidence for a bigger change that you see coming from your company, from Microsoft, and that is embracing multi-platform, embracing everything doesn't have to be Windows. That there was a comment on I listened recently to an episode on the .NET Rocks podcast where Mary Jo Foley was on there, and I believe it was either Mary Jo said this or Richard Campbell said it about something that where the attitude of Microsoft isn't, you have to be a customer of ours, you have to have a Windows laptop, a Windows tablet, a Windows phone, and an Xbox One, all worth an ASP.NET website. You have to be doing all that stuff. Where now, it seems more of, look, if you're using any of our products on any platform, then you're a customer of ours. We don't have to buy hook, line, and sinker. Sinker. We don't want a sinker.
Not if we can help it.
That's not part of the business model. Investors wouldn't like that. It's very cool to see that this just embracing so much more stuff and being so much more open. So it's very cool to see it. So.
Yeah, it's really nice. I think it's sort of very all encompassing and it feels good.
Yeah. And that thing, the update you just gave, the streamlined.NET for server and cloud. I mean, what's kind of cool with that too is, cutting off things that we don't need on the server or in the cloud, like XAML-based things or GDI-based things inside the .NET framework, being able to cut those kinds of things out and a lot of those things that make the framework so much heavier and stuff. I think
I think that's interesting for two reasons, right? The first is, as .NET, as that framework got bigger and bigger and bigger, the framework got bigger and it was more to carry and all of that sort of stuff. And so by being able to sort of chop pieces out of it for runtime mean that you're loading it way faster and it's not such a burden. But also the other really interesting thing, so the second part of that is about being able to, in the past how .NET you used to put it on a machine and that was it, right? You had .NET X, Y, and Z.
Mm-hmm.
But in a web application on IIS, you had to pick which application pool that website ran in, and that was tied to a .NET version.
Yeah.
Right. So it was like one .NET version inside it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So now I think they're also aiming, if I've understood it correctly, you're going to be able to have different apps running different versions that are just optimized for that app, side by side, which is awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, this Cordova thing, I think, if you indulge me for a second, there's two or three paragraphs from the blog post that we'll reference. This show is going to have a boatload of show notes. So all these things we're talking about, we'll have links on the show notes when the show goes live. But there's a couple pieces here that I think make you just take a step back to realize how big of a deal this is. So talk about multi-platform. Let me just read from what I say on the blog post. So, quote, projects can be built, deployed, and debugged against a variety of devices, device emulators, and web-based mobile simulators. And by default, you can use the Apache Ripple simulator to test your application in the browser before deploying to a device. The preview release also supports attaching the Visual Studio debugger to Ripple or a local emulator or a device. And you can stay in Visual Studio while debugging your JavaScript and DOM layout running on an Android 4.4 device.
That is super cool.
Okay, so let that sink in for a second. Now, this is on this is on Soma's blog, okay? Let me read the next two paragraphs and then give you a quote from Adobe engineer. So, quote, by installing it, and of course, this is after the screenshot of Visual Studio showing emulators for Nexus 7, a Nexus Galaxy, and a Nexus S and an Android emulator.
Yeah.
Okay, so by installing and configuring the vs-mda-remote node package on a Mac, you can even build for iOS, deploy to a device via iTunes, or start your app in the iOS simulator on a Mac, all from Visual Studio. Let that sink in. Now, Apache Cordova is a popular choice today for applications that share a large amount of code across a wide variety of devices. Combining Apache Cordova with Visual Studio provides a great end-to-end development experience for mobile-first development. It's great to be partnering with Apache Cordova Project on delivering these experiences. Now, this is a quote by a guy named Jesse McFadden on from Adobe, a core Apache contributor. He says, quote, "It is very exciting not only to welcome Visual Studio developers, but also welcome first-class tools to Apache Cordova. This development is a great validation of the hard work of the MS Open Tech team and Apache Cordova contributors. We look forward to continuing this cool work with Microsoft's developers." This is a huge turning point. Those four paragraphs speak volumes of what this company is doing right now.
I'm going to let you finish in a minute, but there is a hole that just opened straight to hell right beside me here.
I'm done now. We can keep going on about this, but that's awesome. That's really cool.
Yeah, it is insane. It's like, even 12 months ago, we wouldn't have been having this conversation.
And it's six months.
Yeah, no, you're right. I mean, and I'm sure the wheels have been in motion a lot longer than we've noticed or we've heard publicly.
Yeah.
So things have been happening for a while, but it's definitely the tides are turning.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, everyone, I know a lot of people give Satya, the new CEO of Microsoft, a lot of credit for this stuff. But I mean, like you said, this has been going on for a while.
Magic doesn't happen overnight. But
no.
Decisions get made overnight.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, things get opened up. I mean, things just like going, yes, ship Office on the iPad right now.
Yeah.
And that kind of stuff, that's epic. Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's very cool. It's great for the ecosystem, I think. We'll start seeing Microsoft developers building stuff that ships on other devices and vice versa because of this.
Absolutely, absolutely. And so another update we saw on just the general dev space, which also kind of dovetails over to Azure, is that in Visual Studio 2013, there is an update, it's version update 1.3. Let me see what the tools are called. They have a plugin for Application Insights. So Application Insights is a thing that you can add to your Azure website that it adds like a little JavaScript kind of a call out. So when someone hits your application, it phones home back to Azure, and in your Azure website portal interface, you can see a bunch of data about your project, about your website, where people are coming from and stuff. And it's not the same thing, but conceptually it works in a similar way as like the Google Analytics stuff does. But it's all about insights into how your application is performing and not so much about the marketing side of it and everything. So
yeah, gotcha.
it could go in that direction, but that's awesome. So new update to that, which is intro to a new portal experience, single sign-on experience. So when you navigate to the portal from Visual Studio, you're not going to need to re-enter your credentials to sign on, and a bunch of bug fixes and stuff. So
sweet.
Yep.
That's all goodness.
Yep, definitely. So that wraps up all my general developer stuff that I thought we should talk about.
Yeah, cool. So why don't we quickly dive into our new sort of new segment of the show and briefly introduce that. So we thought we'd just for listener entertainment and to spice things up a little bit, we thought we'd introduce a section of the show where you, the listeners, get to ask a question to us about pretty much anything. And so why don't you talk?
But
about
you got to keep it clean. You got to keep it clean. Or at least we're going to keep it clean. You can try.
You can send in dirty questions if you want, but we're not going to answer them on the show.
Exactly. Exactly. We would, but you're just going to hear that, like was it the emergency broadcast test tone for about a minute or so?
Right on.
Yeah. So there's, I'll admit that this is kind of a copy or a steal from something that the .NET Rocks guys do, Carl Franklin and Richard Campbell. What they do is they have a sponsor they have various sponsors, and they give away something like a subscription to like the Telerik developer suite once for a show. And then they tell about how every December they give away $5,000 worth of technology to someone. So it could be a complete dev rig. It could be like an Oculus rig. You name it. It could be anything. And then what they do is they take from that little segment that they do for, and they announce like who's the one that won. They then look to the person that they're interviewing and they said, if you had $5,000, what would you do with $5,000 to do something with technology? So would you buy a new, 4K monitor? Would you buy an ultimate gaming rig? What would you do? Hmm. And so the idea here is the same thing. It's just like, but that was where we got the idea. But we're going to have some fun with this. Ask us. If this, think of this as like the Reddit for AC and CJ.
Ask us anything.
Ask us absolutely anything. So we're going to start the question here. Send us the questions via the website, via our Twitter on MS Cloud Show, via the contact form on the website. You name it. Just send us the questions in, and we'll make sure that we include them. At least one question for every episode that we go from here on out.
Yeah, that would rock. I'm looking forward to hearing what people want to ask.
Yeah, and think we're going
to. I'm a little bit frightened, to be honest.
I'm a little bit frightened too. It's going to be really fun, right? And so we the only thing we want to do is we want to keep it to where CJ and I can each only have about 30 seconds to answer, because we don't want to go on and do a whole show on this. So
why don't we kick it off with the first with just one that we cooked up, and just to get things started before we dive into the next topic.
Sure, go for it.
So what, AC, what is either the most interesting place in the world you think you've been to, or the most interesting trip that you've taken?
So this is an easy one for me. Obviously, you've always got lots of different things you can come up with for something like this. For me, and I can't remember the exact year, I think it might have been 2009, 2010, 2011. I was in a little town called Trondheim, Norway. About halfway up and on the coast of Norway, when I'm not even going to try to pronounce it, but the volcano in Iceland went off, and it shut down all the air travel in Europe. And I was teaching a class. It went till Friday. On Thursday, that's when they shut down air travel, and I had an absolute nightmare trying to get home. I ended up making my way down to Oslo, due to the very nice, kind gesture of some people in my class who drove me down overnight, a six-hour drive. And then I spent the entire following week trying to find a way home, and finally told my wife late in the week, I said, we get to my 10th attempt, and I am not going to try and come home over the Atlantic. I'm going to try and make my way to someplace like Moscow or Kiev, and then try to fly east and make my way over to China or Japan or Australia and come home across the Pacific. But this is it was an absolute...
A long way around.
Oh my God, it was an absolute nightmare trying to get home.
Brutal.
So never forget that. How about you? What's your most interesting or unique trip you've ever done, or place you've been?
I took a trip once just before I joined Microsoft, where I effectively, and I say effectively, because it wasn't quite, this is not entirely quite true, and I'll tell you in a second, but basically took a train from London to Hong Kong.
Oh, wow, I've heard some of this.
So, and I say effectively because there were a couple of flights involved in like short hops where for one reason or another, the train wasn't running or got put off. But for all intents and purposes, all of the big travel was done on train. I think the longest single train ride without getting on or off was 4 days nonstop. 4 days, 4 nights. And the train stops and you can jump off, grab something to eat, jump back on. But it's, you know, like they tell you when they get off, you're either 5 minutes, 10 minutes, or 15 minutes stop. And so 15 minutes is the longest time you ever get off the train in four days, 4 nights. It was mind-boggling. I went through, obviously, through Europe, through Russia, down into Mongolia, down through China, and then down out into Hong Kong, which, it's China as well, but special region. Yeah.
My goodness.
And I just didn't want to fly anymore. I was trying to get back to New Zealand, and obviously you can only go so far without flying to get to New Zealand, given it's an island. But,
I'd like to hear about this train.
Yeah, exactly. Imagine inventing that. You'd make a lot of money. Got to Hong Kong before I had to get on a flight. So
that's cool. That's
it's
definitely
a long
unique.
Way from Hong Kong, but that's as far as I could get.
Very cool. Yeah. So everybody that's listening, send in your crazy questions. Send absolutely anything. Just keep it clean.
Yeah. Yeah. So fair enough.
Cool. Okay. Right, so let's move on.
Yeah. Let's dive into some Azure news, or some Windows news, I should say.
There we go.
We've got some stuff around IaaS. We've got some stuff around PaaS. Maybe we should kick things off with some AV support.
Here we go. Yeah. So I can talk a little bit about this IaaS stuff, and you can do the PaaS stuff. You want to do that?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, so we're going to go through these. I don't want to say we're going to do them rapid fire, but we're not going to spend a tremendous amount of time on these because we got a lot of stuff that we want to cover, additional updates we want to do.
Yeah, just a quick update, really.
Yeah, so one of the things that they did is that now added to all, for IaaS, this is hosted virtual machines in Microsoft Azure. One of the things they added is they now have built-in support for antivirus package that will be installed into your virtual machines. So that now, you know, if you got these different machines, they say watch out for malware and all that stuff. Now we can have antivirus suite installed right under the VMs for us. Thank you, Microsoft Azure. Another thing we have is some new support and to make it simpler for capturing the hard drive of the VMs and the actual VMs themselves. So they've added some tools into the management portals, into the management portal, excuse me, to make it easier to pull that stuff to go through and get a snapshot of what your VM looks like. Sorry, for capturing your VM. I don't want to say a snapshot. It's not like a true snapshot stuff. And then that's interesting. The snapshot stuff is somewhat interesting because I know you always get the question of how do I do a snapshot like I can on Windows Server 2012 or R2 like I do on my laptop or on my machine at home. Why can't I do that in Azure? And you know, it all depends because you don't know where the hardware is running. And when you save the state of it, the state has got to match the underlying pinnings of the actual hardware. And you don't want to have machines pinned to a specific physical machine. You don't have a VM pegged to a specific physical machine in the cloud. That's what we do on-prem, and we're trying to get away from that by moving things to the cloud. Mm. And then the last one is the there's a thing called internal load balancing. And so now what this is now in preview as a preview release. And the idea is that if you have virtual machines that reside inside of a cloud service or a virtual network, it's going to allow you to do a couple different kinds of load balancing. So you could do load balancing between virtual machines within a cloud service, or you could do it between different cloud services within any type of a virtual network and between on-prem computers and virtual machines in a cross-prem virtual network, right? The existing load balancing that we had before this, it would only provide load balancing between internet-based computers and virtual machines in a cloud service. This one is going to allow us to do new capabilities for hosting virtual machines in Azure. So we'll have a link to where you can do this. Remember, it's in preview mode, but this is nuts.
Yeah, that's kind of crazy. I guess that just really goes to show the sophistication of the kinds of things people are putting in Azure and the need to drive, you know, just even internal load balancing between VMs internally in an Azure environment. That's pretty sweet.
Yeah, all these things that keep coming out, seeing this constant features being added to Azure and Amazon as well. But I mean, I pay attention more closely to Azure. It says what you just said, that what customers are doing with it, but it means that, I mean, to me, it's also that customers are on-prem doing this stuff and they're saying, we don't want to do any of this anymore. We want to give all of this to you. Give all of it to the cloud, and the demands they're putting on these cloud providers is just, and as fast as they're innovating is just, this is amazing. I haven't seen innovation come out this fast from anything, you know, since, I don't remember the last time I've seen stuff come out this fast. It's hard to keep up with it.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. So I got some on the PaaS side of the house. Should we go through those?
Absolutely.
So the first one I got is, general availability for importing and exporting of storage blobs. So this is for when you've got X many terabytes of data on-prem, on a disk or what have you, and you want to get it into Azure, but you don't want to sit there and trickle feed it up and upload it over time. And so you can take that, you can take your disk and effectively FedEx it to Azure and get it up into the cloud. And I think we've touched on this a couple of times through various shows. But that's gone into GA. That's pretty sweet. You can also export stuff as well. So as opposed to just sending stuff in, you can also get it out as well. So if you've got tons of VMs and you want to capture those and bring them down for some reason, you can do that.
I'm going to FedEx a box filled with 2 terabyte disks, and that will be the best bandwidth I've ever had getting stuff to the cloud.
Yeah, never underestimate the bandwidth of a van full of hard drives down a freeway. That's the first thing I got. The second thing I got was this new Azure file service has gone into preview. And this is pretty interesting. So this is a this service gives it's like a SMB sharing between machines. So it's kind of like connected storage, I guess. Mm-hmm. Is that a good way to describe it?
Mm-hmm. Yep, I'd say that.
Yeah, so you can connect and share a set of places where you could stick files, like on a network share at your house or at your work or something like that. And so that means that VMs that you might have running can interact with that share and get and save stuff off into it.
Yeah, I think, and I saw this one because you made a comment right there that I made an assumption that when I first saw this, that, hey, I could actually use this from on-prem and connect to my to connect these hard drives in the cloud. And from I read it is that this is only for Azure VMs.
Yeah, exactly. So being able to share stuff between virtual machines more easily, if it's file-based, right? Mm-hmm. This would be an interesting choice for you.
Mm-hmm.
Good place, like an example would be like a common place you want to write out logs, maybe?
Mm-hmm.
Like logs mm-hmm. and stats, all that sort of stuff. So go to a common location.
Yeah, that's a good example.
And so the third thing that I got is the Azure Redis cache service. So for those of you who are building super scalable or highly scalable cloud services, you're probably going to be looking at doing some sort of caching. You're probably going to be looking at some sort of caching. And there's a bunch of different choices on this, but a really common one is using Redis, and that's, you know, available across different platforms and stuff, but is available in Azure, and it's pretty easy to wire up. There's a sort of experience through the portal. You can go add a new cache instance and get that wired up. And so during, one thing to note here is they say during the preview, the Azure Redis cache will be available in 250 megabyte and 1 gigabyte sizes.
Mm-hmm.
And during the preview, it's going to be free. So this is pretty sweet because I don't know if many of our listeners have built, you know, Azure-based, you know, large, highly scalable systems. But when you're dealing with lots and lots of nodes and instances and you're load balancing stuff between them, then you need a really fast cache that's shared between all those instances to be able to read and write stuff in an ultra-quick way such that all instances get the up-to-date information and you don't have to wait on a database or a web-based read or write.
Yeah, it's interesting. You have to think about the way you architect a cloud-based application or system in a little bit different than the way you are used to doing it. I have seen there's a really good ebook or virtual book or whatever on the the patterns and practices stuff where they did that, which that would probably be a pretty good episode for us to kind of take a look at that and discuss that thing.
Discuss the options.
Yeah.
This one also gives you a .NET client object model, for want of a better word, to be able to talk to the cache and all that sort of stuff. So it's pretty cool. And Azure's had a bit of a history about on how you can cache things. There's been a bunch of different ways to do it. So this is another really commonly well adopted one.
Yep. Yeah, and I saw there's two other little things we can throw into the Azure space, and they probably fall into the IaaS bit that we should have covered earlier. But one is that now Microsoft is offering support for popular Linux distributions on the different Azure VMs, specifically the Canonical, the OpenLogic, and the SUSE, S-U-S-E, Linux distributions. There are some support options that companies can purchase to get some help with those. And then the last one that we touch here is with the Windows 7 and Windows 8.1 Azure for Developers. We now have VMs in there, templates for those client-based OS stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, briefly touched on this last time, but this is fascinating for dev test scenarios, right, where you want to be able to spin up a dev box that's just got your particular tools for a particular project and be really flexible in using Azure for that sort of stuff. So I think that's pretty cool for dev test scenario.
Yep. Very cool.
So office stuff. We mentioned we were going to talk about that. We have quite a bit to cover in here, and so I think we might bump a couple of things off into the next episode. Just to keep things tight.
Yep.
But on the office side of the house, we've got some improvements around Outlook.com. So this is pretty interesting. This is kind of adding some more capabilities to that to that property. Things like sophisticated rules management and things like that that are kind of useful for power email users.
Mm-hmm.
We've got some OneDrive for business updates. Did you get a chance to take a look at those?
I haven't looked too much. I know there's some UI things that they added to it, some things to make, like some extra buttons for making the new, the upload, and the sync, edit, manage, and share. Those aren't really on the taskbar, but they're on the bar right above where you actually look at the libraries. Have a thing called site folders that are going to show you document libraries of SharePoint sites that you follow right within your main OneDrive for Business web view. That is helpful. A smarter search is going to help you quickly find documents with improvements to the scope and search the documents that are shared to you, site folders or your personal OneDrive for Business folders. And then finally, just the big catch-all, additional user interface improvements based on feedback.
Yeah, we started seeing some folks who noticed that trickling out across the service, across Office 365 over the last few weeks. But this is a nice sort of post that we'll link to off on the show notes that sort of summarizes the improvements that have gone in.
Yeah, definitely. Nice. And the last one that we had too that we wanted to touch on here was the .NET, the new .NET and JavaScript libraries and tooling for Office 365 APIs that I think we touched on a little bit last time.
Yeah, we briefly mentioned, the new, the service interface and being able to connect up and wire up to the service. But there are some other things that came out as part of this that we should probably touch on. The first of which is some client libraries that came out to make working with the REST APIs in Office 365 a bit simpler around things like buttoning up authentication and URL management and the queries to those URLs a bit simpler, both from .NET and also from JavaScript. And now being able to have these helper libraries, for want of a better word, help you connect to these things makes the code a whole bunch tidier and easier, and simplifies the whole process a bit.
Very cool.
So that's the first part of that. The second part of it is that they've got some multi-device support built in. So like I mentioned, .NET and JavaScript, but also being able to work with the Xamarin tools for iOS as well as the Cordova stuff is pretty sweet indeed. So being able to build apps that target Office 365 from not only just Windows but iOS and Android and things is pretty cool.
Yep. Yeah, a lot of updates out of Tech Ed this week.
Oh, dude, it's been a lot to take in, and I think we mentioned this a couple of shows ago or a few shows ago. We're talking about visiting conferences. Maybe it was our SharePoint conference sessions that we did or episodes that we did. I have not got to a session yet. And I know you think it's funny. For people that didn't listen to that episode, basically AC and I were saying, we're so busy at these conferences. We're doing sessions ourselves, and we're meeting with different folks. We've got side meetings, and we've got booth duty, and we've got all this other stuff that it's actually quite hard to get to a session. And you know what? Yesterday I had all of the best intentions at getting to a session about building cross-platform or apps that for Windows Phone and Windows 8.1 that with a common code base. I had all the best intentions going to that session at 3:15 in the afternoon, and then ended up talking to somebody on the booth for like an hour and a half, and completely missed it.
Oh man! Yeah, happens.
It's been a good show. There's been a lot of really good news, a lot of excitement and buzz, tons of stuff coming out that people are excited about, and I just think this whole topic that you touched on about more open and transparency and cross-platform stuff. It just got people reinvigorated and revitalized about things. And so that really is sort of permeating conversations, but also the sort of the feel that everybody's got here.
Yeah. And for everybody that's listening to this, I would strongly recommend if you're curious where I'm coming from on those kinds of things and what CJ's saying, go check out episode 979. It's called Recapping Build with Mary Jo Foley. And she goes through and talks about how the attitude from the executive level and just from all the way across the board at Microsoft, how the attitude is very, very different compared to what it was in the past, and how much more open and just inviting and everything is with the Microsoft product brass. I mean, it's just been, the company's just changed. I mean, the attitude is very different, and the attitude is very different. And that might be something that Satya has had a much bigger influence on lately.
I agree. All right. Well, thanks, AC, for another great show. For those listening, we got tons of new stuff to talk about next week as well, so stay tuned for that.
Absolutely. Thanks a lot, everybody.
Thanks.
If you have a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text or record it as a WAV or MP3 and provide a link so we can play your question on the show. You can subscribe to us in iTunes by searching for Microsoft Cloud Show or via RSS at microsoftcloudshow.com, where you'll also find a full transcript and show notes of each episode. You can also find us on Facebook searching for Microsoft Cloud Show or on Twitter at MS Cloud Show. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.